open the meeting today, Board of Equalization 2013, for said hearings. The first is a teleconference call. Christy, I don't have that number. Thank you.
Please enter your account code.
Hello?
Yes, is this Mr. Cooper?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Cooper, this is Ron Houseman. I'm with the Taney County Board of Equalization.
Yes, sir.
And we have you on speakerphone. Along with the Board of Equalization, which includes the county assessor and the county clerk.
Right.
And you have filed an appeal with us regarding a parcel of property. Are you ready to talk about that?
Okay. Yes, I am.
Would you like to proceed? We're ready to hear whatever it is that you have to say. We have your paperwork in
right.
front of us and on the screen.
Yes. Okay. Should I proceed, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, the list I sent on my appeal to the board, the one on the top, I think, is the asking price was $18,900 and sold for $15,000. Our property is on Royal Doorknock, also. It's lot 53, so I think it may be adjacent to the top listing on the list that I was sent to you through real estate agent associated with the development. Our assessment, our full assessment is, I believe, is about $61,000, and the lot, which I believe is adjacent, 52 Royal Doorknock, sold for $15,000, so I think that our full assessment is very high at this point. So like to see reduction in our assessment and the listed value of the house. The other lots on the list that was sold, I think overall the list of 13 undeveloped lots that were sold, they average about just $13,000 to $15,000, I believe. So I think our piece of vacant undeveloped property is highly overassessed.
Let me ask first the assessor a question, because if I'm not mistaken, the valuation you have was the valuation that was on that property a couple of years ago, and the assessor, at least in that particular subdivision, has lowered the valuations of those properties, and what my list shows, James, is 49, not
That's
69.
That's correct, not 60. He's got to roll down to 60. Mr. Cooper, you got to roll down to 61, and we lowered it. Everything from that $12,000 to $49,000 for those lots. And that was substantiated by appraisal done by Harvest Bank on some lots they had taken back and different individuals about the subdivision.
I couldn't hear that very well, but it said full assessment became listed at a value of $49,000. When was that, sir?
This spring. We worked on that right up to book close of July 1st, sir.
This year?
Yes. And it's
okay, I think I would like a further reduction in the full assessment in so much but that property adjacent to ours was sold for $15,000, so perhaps we could reach a compromise on the adjustment.
The only way the board has lowered any of the properties below what they actually established last year is if there's an obsolescence to one of your lots, if it's got a drainage ditch across it, if it's in a poor location, if it's
ours is.
Okay. Does it have improvements, road improvements?
No, there've been no improvements on it.
And James, if I'm not mistaken, as I'm looking at the map, it's not a regular piece of property, it's a triangle?
Oh, yes, I believe that's correct, sir.
But doesn't Roll Doorknock, we're looking at three houses built on Roll Doorknock? On the screen.
Back up on the road, I see where you're talking about, right?
Looks like a paved street with a center line on it.
Yeah, it says that. You were asking, sir. I wasn't quite sure. I could.
You got to move that over. What the question was there any improvements to your lot? I know there's some undeveloped areas of Branson Hills. But it appears that yours is in the developed areas of Branson Hills.
I believe it is a paved street, perhaps some houses have been built in that area. So we're not on the interior of that phase. It's not. We're not on the golf course, which I think lowers the value. There's been no improvement on the lot itself.
With the configuration of the lot, I don't have any opposition to the board coming up with a value of...
Well, let me express this. We made a decision yesterday regarding the properties that are in this particular subdivision. We're going to take another look at the subdivision, and we're holding these properties back for final decision. Is that right, Mr. Gentleman?
Yeah.
We'll be glad to talk with you within limits as long as you would like to talk regarding this particular parcel of property and any thoughts you have on it or any description of the property itself. But until we have heard other appeals from that same political subdivision, we're not going to be making a final decision. What we will tell you is that it has already been lowered from what you have in your hand.
Yeah,
down to an appraised value of 49, which is an assessed value of
9,310
dollars.
Okay, when was that reduced? I wasn't aware of that. I think it was the list I remembered. It was the appraised listing was about 11,000 something, which equates to about 61,000 in value.
But if I'm not mistaken, this has been done over the course of the last 45 days?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that. Okay. I'm looking at what the adjacent lot was sold for, which was 15,000, was listed at about 19,000 in it. You know, if someone told me that it would tell me that they would give me $49,000 for it, I would agree to that in a heartbeat. At this point, I would like a further reduction that would reflect the real value of it.
You keep referring to the lot next door to it. Was that a bank sale? A foreclosure?
I don't know, sir. I received the listing of that and 12 other lots that were sold from an agent for the developer.
Right.
Or just associated with the developer.
Right. And when we figure the market value and then we figure these particular subdivisions, we have to take into account the lots that have been through a foreclosure process versus when you do your comparisons. So that's a question that we're going to review as we review the entire subdivision. We looked at this
2 years ago and lowered it. We looked at it again last year, and James has already made a reduction this year on it. So as we review all the lots and everybody that comes in to make a presentation on that's from this subdivision, then we'll make a final judgment in probably the last 2 days or of BOE,
okay,
or 3 days of BOE.
And so you will inform me of your decision?
Yes. Go ahead, Ron.
Okay. Appreciate the consideration, and hopefully we could reach something that's more agreeable to myself and my partner. So I appreciate your time, and you'll be in contact with us.
Mr. Cooper, when this petition does make a decision, be notified within 5 to 7 days of that decision by the county clerk. You'll also receive information if, in fact, you're not happy with the decision of the Board of Equalization. You'll receive information on how to go forward with the Missouri State Tax Commission and further appeal this board's decision. But all that will be explained to you in writing.
Yes, I appreciate your time, and have a good day, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Inside of Beacon, what are these properties, next properties listed as? Is it?
Can I talk to the street?
Try again.
And the first one is Cap. K-A-U-A-L. The second property down is the parking lot.
Chris, did you have multiple pages that covers what we have in front of us on Beacon? As you come forth, if you would identify yourself, we're recording this, and it's also broadcasting live on the internet.
Yes, sir. Well, first, let me thank you so much for your time, for allowing us to appear before you today, and we really appreciate your open minds and open hearts to hearing what we have to say. My name is Chris Stang. I am the Chief Financial Officer at Kanakuk Ministries. And, of course, our purpose for appearing before you this morning is to establish that Kanakuk Ministries meets the Missouri statute's requirements for exemption from both personal property taxes and real estate taxes. And it's our understanding that we only need to qualify for one of the three exemptions that are found in the statutes. And we're going to demonstrate to you this morning in our presentation that Kanakuk Ministries actually qualifies for all three of the exemptions. So my role this morning is just to give you a real brief introduction to Kanakuk Ministries, and I'm going to have three of my colleagues actually come. They are much more interesting speakers than I am, but they will be able to articulate to you how our property is used to meet those exempt statutes. So you each should have hopefully a binder with you that we've provided. Hopefully everyone has that. Very good. I want to draw your attention actually to the front cover of that, because we have both our mission and vision statements on there. Our mission statement for Kanakuk Ministries is developing dynamic Christian leaders through life-changing experiences, godly relationships, and spiritual training. And our vision statement is to evangelize and equip the next generation to reach the world for Christ. And I point these out, these are the foundation of everything that Kanakuk Ministries does. Every program, every project, every activity. This is why we exist. And I'm going to just walk you through a few pages inside this binder just to orient you. So if you'll turn to the first tab, I think it's a yellow tab that says property. I think it's yellow, and if it's not yellow, it's the property tab. Okay, red. Okay, that's all right. There's a table there on the first page, again, that lists. We're talking about eight different parcels in Taney County that Kanakuk Ministries operates on. And so the first column there, you see each of the parcel numbers listed. Actually, we've grouped them by the camps that we operate. And I'll talk about those in just a second. But for simplicity, the next column over says map location. We have referred to these each of these parcels as 1 through 8. Again, just for simplicity. And I think if you'll turn back to the next page, you'll find a map that actually is taken from the Beacon system. And you'll see the map locations from the first page identified there, and I'll just talk you briefly through those. So really, on these eight parcels, we operate three different camps, plus we have our administrative offices and our main chapel located here. So map locations 1, 2, and 3 on that map is our Camp Kauai. That's where we operate our Camp Kauai. And then map 7, just above that on the map, is where we operate our Camp K Country. Locations 4, 5, and 6 are where we operate our Camp K1. So those are the three camps. And then map location 8 is where we have our administrative offices, and we also have our main chapel is located there as well. And then if you'll turn back one more page, there's another table, and again, I hope this is helpful for you, but we've again identified the map locations 1 through 8 there. We've given you the camps that those map locations relate to, and then on the far right there, you can see we've listed for you the major improvements that are contained on each of those parcels, and I'm not going to read through those for you, but just wanted to provide that for sake of ease. Just to keep turning back a page, you'll notice that we have also our personal property declaration for 2013. I am not going to go through that with you all, but we just wanted, you know, to make sure everybody had a copy of that. Okay. And then I'm going to keep going, again, just through a few of the tabs just to orient you to what we have in our binder. The next tab should be organization tab. Mine is green. I'm not sure what color yours is. But just want to, again, draw your attention. We have provided our articles of restatement Now, these are actually our articles of incorporation. Back in 2003, we made some amendments to our original articles of incorporation, and so we just restated our articles of incorporation. In fact, you'll notice we used to be known as Christian Children's Charity, and these articles of restatement actually changed our name to Kanakuk Ministries. Again, that was back in 2003. But what I want to draw your attention to is in our articles, our at the bottom of that first page are legal reasons for existence. This is why Kanakuk exists. And so A through D, items A through D there, tell you why we exist. And I'm going to read those to you if you don't mind. Item A is to relieve poverty by providing food, clothing, medical supplies, and other basic needs to underprivileged or impoverished children. B is to advance the kingdom of God and promote Christian virtue in individuals by providing support for Christian evangelistic organizations and programs. C is to educate children and advance the kingdom of God by operating camps to teach Christian faith and athletic skills. And then finally, D is to assist other religious, charitable, and educational organizations in the conduct of similar activities. Again, those are our legal reasons for existence. I do want to point out one thing. You may hear us refer often to our organization as Kanakuk Camps. We actually have registered a fictitious name of Kanakuk Camps. In fact, that's how we market ourselves. Most of our campers, in fact, all of our campers that come to our camps, they would know us as Kanakuk Camps. But our legal name is Kanakuk Ministries, and we went ahead the last page behind the organization tab, you know, for your information, is our fictitious name registration for Kanakuk Camps. Okay, I'm going to the next tab, which should be the exempt status tab. Kanakuk Ministries is a nonprofit 501c3 organization. And the first page behind the exempt status tab, this is our IRS determination letter. This is the IRS substantiating that we, Kanakuk Ministries, is in fact a 501c3 organization. And turning the page, the next page is our Missouri Sales and Use Tax Exemption Certificate. It's a permanent certificate, and you'll notice that we, you know, qualified under the religious exemption according to the state of Missouri. Now I'm going to just turn the page there just to kind of give you a brief summary of where, kind of how we got to where we are today. In 2007, we, Kanakuk Ministries, appeared before this board, and the board agreed with us that property in map location number one, which again is where we operate our Kauai camp, was in fact exempt.
Chris, did you tell me what year that was?
In 2007.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Again, that's map location one. That was really the only camp that Kanakuk Ministries operated at that time. Then in 2008, in December of 2008, Kanakuk Ministries was given a very generous gift from Joe and Debbie Joe White of the other camps that are operated in Taney County. And In 2009, Kanakuk Ministries appeared again before this board and gained exemption for the map locations 2 through 8, those 7 parcels. So until we've been exempt for those 8 parcels until 2013, we were once again assessed for, I believe, all 8 parcels. And I do want to point out, the use of those parcels has not changed since 2007 and 2009. We have not changed anything, how we operate and how we use, you know, use the property. I also want to point out personal property tax. If you'll flip back behind the 2007 decision, you'll notice that we have three pages that are the statement of non-assessment from 2008, 2009, and 2010 from the Taney County Collector. That's for obviously for our personal property taxes. So we were given exemptions in those 3 years. In early 2012, we're registering our vehicles. We're preparing to register our vehicles. And we were informed that they were no longer exempt. In fact, retroactive back to 2011, they were no longer exempt. So what we have done is we have paid 2011 and 2012 personal property taxes under protest, and we're in the process of following the proper channels to gain back what we paid in as tax. Obviously believe that we were exempt even then. All right, so that's kind of a brief, again, background just to summarize our real estate and personal property taxes. I do want to make one point at this juncture. You know, our property is not rented or available for rent to outside or unrelated organizations. We don't lease our facilities to, you know, really to any outsiders that can just come in and lease our properties. Kanakuk Ministries is a charitable organization, and I have a few points to that. If you look behind the charitable tab, should be the next tab in line there. You'll notice we have just a one-page summary for you. In 2012, Kanakuk Ministries, we gave away $1.3 million in discounts and scholarships for kids to come to our camps. And included in that, that was about 1,900 kids that we gave that amount away to. And that includes $315,000, by the way, that was given to about 320 campers that are residents of Taney and Stone County. Kanakuk Ministries, and by the way, that's something we do every year. That's not just 2012. We do that. We'll do that this year. We'll do that. We've done that every year to that magnitude. In 2012, you know, as part of our exempt purpose, you know, we give away a lot of money to other organizations and needy individuals. In 2012, we gave away $650,000 to support other nonprofit organizations and needy individuals. And again, we do this every year. That's who we are. That's what we're called by God to do. And I will say, yes, our campers, they do pay a fee to attend our camps. We're not obviously hiding that fact. The tuition, I will tell you, the tuition that we collect for these three camps that are operated in Taney County, actually, the tuition we collect is less than it costs to operate those three camps. So essentially, we're subsidized by outside donations that we receive. And I bring this to your attention because our campers attending those camps are actually paying less than what it costs us to operate each of those camps. The other thing I want to point out to you is that, again, because we're a nonprofit 501c3, there are no profits or excess benefits that from Kanakuk Ministries that go to any private organization or, you know, private organization or company or private individual. And again, that's actually something that's contained in our Articles of Restatement, Section 7A, if you want to refer to that. Kanakuk Ministries is also, you know, really religious organization and educational. And I'll just say this. Our property is primarily inherently used for religious worship and education. And I'm going to have three of my colleagues that can really articulate that much better than I can. They're much more interesting speakers than I am. And but I want to make sure everyone has a great understanding of how we use our property to worship God and to educate folks. And I'm going to introduce each of them as they appear. And the first one that I want to bring up is Trish Helsel. Trish is our executive women's director at our camps. And she's been with us for 16 years. And Trish's background is in teaching and coaching at Branson High School. And we kind of stole her away from there. But I am going to, at this point, turn it over to her. And again, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate that.
Before Trish comes up, we've got some materials we want to distribute. We just brought one of each. We didn't want to give you seven stacks of each. So I thought what we'll do, if you're okay, just distribute those up to the front table. We've got another separate set to help Donna. That's more extensive file, but that's just your review.
You'll give us just a minute.
Yes, sir.
Are you up?
Yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to point out we passed out a list of some of our material that we distribute to campers that we're going to talk about. You all actually have a list of those. I think it's at the very maybe the second page in your binder there. Just so you can see that. It's right behind the table of contents. It's actually before the first tab. It's before the first tab, right behind the table of contents. Yeah. There you go. Okay. Thank you, Trish.
Y'all ready?
Yes.
Good morning. Thank y'all for listening to us today. A few years ago, actually several years ago, I'm probably dating myself, I saw a movie called We Were Soldiers, and I don't know if y'all have seen that movie or not. It was a classic with Mel Gibson, and it was a war movie, and there was a line in that movie that said, he was over his troops, and he said, "We will leave no one behind." And when I watched that movie, I was like, goodness sakes, that's kind of what our mindset is at camp. We have such a vision and a passion for every single kid to hear the gospel and to understand truth so that we can spend an eternity in heaven with them. And so for me, as a former high school teacher and a coach, I realized that the vitality and the purpose of anything that you do has to start with a great mission and a great vision. And then everything that you, every decision you make comes from that mission and that vision statement. Our common theme and mission is that we develop dynamic Christian leaders through life-changing experiences, godly relationships, and spiritual training. So everything that we do at camp, whether it's an activity that we do sporting-wise, playing basketball, volleyball, soccer, whether it's that type of an athletic event, whether it's a K-Life activity, which is what we do at night, where we have fun skits and we teach about the gospel, whether it's the morning when we wake up, no matter what we do, our purpose is a common theme, and that's to equip kids to evangelize and share the gospel for the rest of their lives. So with that being said, I would love to be able to take you through a typical day of what we do at camp. Super fun. Everything that we do, we want to make sure our kids are creating memories, that we are having fun, and that we are lacing the gospel of truth through every activity. So when our kids wake up in the morning, they wake up to a theme and a verse of the day. And every verse of the day, and I'll kind of show you what we have right here. This is one of our Devo books that we do. And this is the one that we wrote for this summer. Every day when our kids wake up, they see a verse, and that's kind of how we run our day, is through this verse and that theme of the day. If you will look towards your binder, there's a camp daily schedule in there. And so to start with, I'd love to just kind of walk you through a typical daily schedule. And this schedule is fairly consistent at every camp. It might, the times might be tweaked, but the purpose of what we do throughout our entire day remains very consistent. So when we wake our kids up, we start with a quiet time in the morning. At the camp that I get to personally direct, this is what our kids do in their quiet time. So they have 30 minutes where they are right off the bat studying the Word of God. They come to breakfast, and at every camp, during every meal, we open with prayer and we close. Then they go to their morning kind of gathering time. And at every camp's gathering time, there will be a speaker or a talk, something that relates back to Scripture or to that verse or theme of the day. Then when they head to their activities, every activity we do, and at the camp that I get to personally work at, we have about 50 different classes that we offer for campers to take. And in every single class, what we do is we open with Scripture, we open with the verse of the day, and then we end that class with Scripture and the and prayer and the verse of the day. At each activity, kids have an opportunity to do crazy, wild, adventurous activities that sometimes we don't get to do just back home in our normal lives. That's all the fun stuff that you see on our properties. You're going to see blobs, and you're going to see great athletic equipment. And what our focus is to create those moments. That's that aha moment for a kid to go, oh my gosh, I get how I can be a volleyball player and tie in how to work hard, how to be a great teammate, and how to have biblical life principles through every activity that we do at camp. Part of our mission statement is says that we want to help develop godly leaders through life-changing experiences. And as adults, most of us understand that those life-changing experiences often come when we do something outside of the box, or something that challenges us or pushes us. And that's part of our focus at Kanakuk. Once our kids are in those classes, again, during the class, we open, we end with Scripture, and then we have a time that we call a special devotional time. So we take the verse of the day and the Bible study that they've been working through, and we process, how can you take this and take that back home and apply that into your community? That's spiritual training that we want to equip our kids with, so that they can not only have a blast and grow spiritually by themselves at camp, but as well back home within their community, so that the gospel is constantly being shared. On top of that, that we do every day, we have an evening activity. And our evening activities, all focus on something that, again, is super fun and very spiritual. We usually have either what we call K-Life Talks, and a K-Life Talk is where we have our leaders stand up and talk about something that's very relevant for those kids. We have high school kids at the camp that I get, so we'll talk about issues that high school kids are struggling with or spiritual foundational truths that high school kids need to hear. And then once that nighttime activity is over, every kid goes back and in their cabin, we end the day with a nighttime devotional based off of that program. So as y'all can see, from the time we start to the time we end, every activity we do comes back to that common theme and mission of evangelizing and equipping the next generation to reach the world for Christ.
Can I interrupt you?
Yes.
There's no doubt that you guys are a Christian organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so just my opinion, I feel like you guys should be exempt. I guess what we really need to talk about is why you were exempt and why you aren't now. So is that something, that, James, you need to talk about, or is that something that you guys want to address? I mean, great presentation, but we're here because you used to be exempt, now you're not. Why? Unless you guys want to continue on. I'm just one.
And back to...
Actually, I'm pretty excited the public gets an opportunity to hear what she has to say.
I've always been excited about Kennecott Camp. I was at Kennecott Camp with my dad when he worked with Mr. Spike White building the camp. Our closest neighbor, Jim McClary, worked for Kennecott Camp for many, many years. Ori Dickey, all of the old-timers that I loved and cherished the most worked for Kennecott Camp. And Spike White was instrumental of it. I had a feed store. Spike White was the wonderful patron of my feed store. Kennecott Camp bought all their materials there. I love Kennecott Camp. But I have to run my office by the law. Now, in your presentation, you give me a very important document, and you'll see why at one time this exemption came through the county commission, and it didn't come through the Board of Equalization, I don't believe. Don, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
No, it did. 2007 came through the Board of Equalization.
Okay,
sir.
All right. I stand corrected. But I want to read something to you from one of your 501(c). This exemption
is
not, it'll be in the green tab,
okay.
Second page, okay. From Missouri Sales and Use Tax Exemption. This exemption is not assignable or transferable. It is an exemption from sales and use taxes only, and is not an exemption from real or personal property taxes. Right in the law, I have to abide by. 501(c) is no exemption for any organization. We get that perception in our mind that if we get that designation, we're automatically exempt. They state that right in the document that I have to abide by. Then the other thing that has come about and brought the attention, Mr. Williams, is if Kennecott Camp is exempt from all state and use taxes, why do they have to pay for their license plates? Why does the state not exempt your license plates? That's where you had to come to me and receive something either through the collector's office or through the assessor's office and go, I got to pay my personal property tax before I can receive my tags. The state don't exempt you from your license plates that's required by the state of Missouri. There's many things. The exemption came, and I'm assuming my personal property girls said, well, if they exempt them today from real estate, we're going to exempt them from personal property. It went through. I didn't pay no attention. I'll just say it. I didn't pay no attention that these waivers was being issued. By Missouri law, personal property owned by a church is not tax exempt in the state of Missouri. personal property is to be paid on. There's many cases. I see where you've quoted many cases in here. I've read most of those cases, and I've been to court on these cases because that's my job. My job isn't to turn my back and walk away from what is spelled out to me by the Missouri state statutes. And so that's why the exemption was lifted. It was that you guys came in and requested, and I just happened to be there and go, why is this happening? If the state of Missouri feels that they're not exempt, why is Taney County saying they're exempt from Missouri state law? So that's where it all came from, Mr. Williams. I hope I've answered your question on why these exemptions was lifted. Then it's back to the real property. Branson Sports Club, and I'm assuming that everyone in here knows who Branson Sports Club is. It's a gymnasium north of Branson used to educate children and have a place to go have sporting activities. They took their case all the way to the state, and the state ruled they were not exempt from nothing. That's my issue. Some of these exemptions we've been handed out may not be handed out to according to Missouri state law. And that's why I did what I did. I didn't do it for any harm to Kennecott Camp. Kennecott Camp, like I say, has been the foundation of Taney County for many years. Mr. White always wanted my brother and I to be there. He said, John, why don't you let them boys come down to camp for a couple of weeks? Well, we was always busy in the hay at the time, so we didn't go to camp. But that's where I stand on what I've did, and I'm not ashamed of what I've did. I'm following the law, and I believe the law is here. And my son travels, and he works on natural disasters. He worked New Orleans. He worked North Carolina. He worked New York. He worked. He is now in San Antonio. He gets paid for it. The company gets paid for what he does. Never misses church on Sunday morning. His boys always pray before their meals. But that doesn't make him exempt in any way of all the good work that he does for God and what he does. Doesn't make him exempt on his cars or his trucks or anything else. It's what we're supposed to do as Americans anyhow. These things are what we're supposed to daily do as Americans, whether we have to be taught it or not. So that's where I stand on it.
At this point, can I just introduce Virginia Fry?
Before you do, can I ask a couple questions of the assessor, and then we'll come back?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
We're definitely interested in your presentation. Okay. We have a lot of time for this board to hear what all you have to say.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And not to be argumentative, James, but I have a question or two. The state, if we make our decision based upon what the state does and who the state taxes and what type of taxes they charge, we need to consider that the state almost never exempts themselves from anything. For example, when the county buys fuel for road and bridge or for any other department, we don't pay federal tax on that fuel, but we pay state tax. And we're certainly an exempt organization as the county from a lot of charges and fees. But there are doggone few fees that the state charges that we're exempt from, because the state has written in special provisions to make sure that they get their buck. Just my opinion, and it's tough to base whom they assess for what purposes and make any decision about any other assessments or fees that should be charged, at least from my perspective. They don't let us off the hook, and we're exempt.
Well,
I mean, I can give you different examples. That's just one.
Well, what I see in the matter is, I've had cases go to the state on exemption that I thought was sure winners that were losers, and I've had cases go that I thought was sure losers that were vice versa. And the state exemption, and you guys are smart. You guys are extremely smart, or you wouldn't be where you are today. These folks are intelligent. Yes, you are. If you wasn't smart, you wouldn't be sitting there. But I'm telling you, it's beyond us to determine these exemptions of this type of situation. It's beyond our local control to say this is exempt. I'm leaving the assessor's office September 1.
I understand what you're saying. First, let me preface any other comments I make by this. I believe every decision you make in the assessment process is because you believe that 100% that is based upon what the law tells you to do. I believe that 100%, and I applaud you for that. On the other side of the coin, we're going to be charged with the responsibility of looking at where we're at today, what our interpretation of those same statutes are, and what has happened in the past. Because at some time, at least according to the presentation today, in 2007 and 2009, the 2007 number one on the map was exempted by DOE, according to the presentation. And in 2009, numbers 2 through 8 were exempted by a prior BOE here in Taney County. So they did take a local action to make a decision regarding this process. And now that has changed. And the question that Brandon had was, and you articulated it, I think, very well as to why that changed.
Thank you.
Well, to get into the history of this more and why, Kids Across America was the first case with Kennecott Camps, and it went to circuit court, and Judge Efford at the time said Kids Across America was exempted, and it was in the old Rex Grady house right there in Kennecott Camps' yard. Dulos Ministries was exempt. There was various portions of Kennecott Camp that was never questioned by the assessor of exemption or not. But then when the whole thing came in as being an exempt organization and the purchase of motels for people to stay in while they visited their children there, neighboring motels, and pulling those off the rolls as an exemption, that's when the question started arising. Kids Across America is a benevolent organization nationally. It's not a private organization, and it was exempted. So that's where you had portions exempted, and then all of a sudden the whole question came forward. Well, is the whole camp exempted by the change of Kennecott Camp Incorporated to Kennecott Ministries, a name change? We have many churches. Assembly of God pays loads of taxes in Taney County. And they've got it under Assembly of God. They've got their condominiums they pay taxes on. They've got all these things that taxes are paid on through churches. And a lot of people in the public just generally say if it's a church, they don't pay taxes. That's not the case according to Missouri law. I apologize for that. I apologize that the laws are not written in favor of that, but they're not, guys. I've sat through many cases into the 16 years.
You used the there's state of Missouri exempt tax form.
Yes.
What does ours say? Does ours have that? I read it as they're not saying they're tax exempt, but they're also not saying that they aren't. They're just kind of leaving it up to, in my opinion, leaving it up to possibly the, you know, where they're at. So also, this exemption is not assignable or transferable. It is an exemption from sales tax, sales and use taxes only, and is not an exemption from real or personal property tax. It doesn't say that they will be taxed, though.
No, it doesn't say that they will be.
So, what does ours say? What does First Baptist Churches say? I'm curious because I don't know.
I think it's a form letter. I think they all.
So, if it's a form letter, I guess
it's the same letter. I think.
If it's the same letter for everything, then I don't know that that could be used as a legal reason as to why they are taxable.
What you hear, and you'll continue to hear whenever an exemption case comes in front of this board, is we're a 501(c), so we're exempt from property taxation.
We understand the ramifications of that. You're right.
That's not the case. And a lot of people receive those 501(c)s with the expectations that they're exempt from property taxation. And that's not the case. And we try to explain that to people when they come in, that's not the case.
Mr. Stang, you were ready to go back into a presentation mode, and that's fine.
Yes, I think it's probably appropriate at this time to introduce Virginia Fry. Virginia Fry is a mother of two campers, okay? She also happens to be our counsel. So I think she can answer some of the questions maybe that have been brought up.
Before you begin, let me tell Trish that's standing behind you that I wouldn't mind hearing the rest of what you have to say sometime, and I can see why you're where you're at.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, what I'm going to say may not be quite as interesting, but since we've kind of, I think a good question was asked here, so let me see if I can provide a little bit of framework here, and because I think Mr. Strahan is right. The issues that you're dealing with as a Board of Equalization are really very complicated, and it is hard sometimes to, because you read things in the paper like the Branson Sports Club case, and so I thought it might be helpful. We're not going to get into any kind of exhaustive legal discussion here, but I wanted to provide a little bit of framework because as has been pointed out, we have provided some information, and it really is just information about the tax status, the 501c3, the letter from the state saying that we're exempt. But that was not given to you to suggest that that's the reason that you should decide that Kanakuk Ministries and the properties and the personal property that we're talking about here today is exempt. It was just to give you an example that in other contexts, other entities that have looked at it have concluded that yes, the operation qualified to be exempt. But really what the Board of Equalization is doing here this morning is looking at an area that in our Missouri Constitution, there's actually a provision that talks about how you can have a property that is exempt, and then the legislature adopted a statute that set forth different reasons that you could be exempt. In this particular case, what we're talking about is the religious, the charitable, and the educational. Now, you heard just a little piece of information, and we've got some great testimony here today, if you had time to hear it all, from the camp. I know you're familiar with the camp operation, but what you also need to understand is that the use of that property that we're talking about is not limited to 6 weeks in the summer. There is also an educational component to Kanakuk. They run a Link Year program, and really that property is used 12 months of the year in ways that are for religious reasons, for educational reasons, and for charitable reasons. And in your binder, there is a tab at the very end that kind of summarizes just a one-page summary of the reasons for the exemption. Now, keep in mind that if they qualify for even one of these reasons, then they qualify. But what we wanted to try to illustrate to you here today is that they don't just qualify one way. They actually qualify three ways. They have, I don't think there's much doubt here that there is certainly a religious component to the Kanakuk Ministries operation. I think maybe if we went back and if you look at the map of the parcels that are involved, I can understand the confusion here because there was a change in operation at Kanakuk a few years ago, and when that change first occurred, which was actually in 2008. The Board of Equalization at that time looked at this with respect to Parcel 1. But if you look at Parcel 1, which is the parcel that contains Camp Kauai, or actually we refer to that as the family camp, that land is actually owned by Kanakuk Ministries. But if you look at the other parcels that we're talking about here today, 2 through 8, Kanakuk Ministries has a lease on all of that land and operates all of those camps pursuant to lease. The owners of the fee, the ground that all of those property sits on, pay real estate tax. So all we're really talking about from parcels 2 through 8, again, are, and in Missouri, you can tax leasehold interest. So the fact that Kanakuk Ministries has a lease is really what we're looking at here. And what Kanakuk Ministries is saying is, you know, that should be exempt. Now, there's been some discussion about the Branson Sportsman's Club case. Here's the difference between that situation and what we're talking about today. In that case, the owners of the ground that that building sits on were a couple, and I forget their name.
Dacridge.
Yeah. They actually owned the ground. And they were the ones that were trying to claim that because the Sportsman's Club qualified as a charitable organization, that they shouldn't have to pay the real estate tax on it. Because the lease, the people that were leasing the ground or the improvements from them were charitable. And if you actually look at that opinion, the parties to that case, the charitable group wasn't even involved. It was the property owners trying to say, well, because the use of that property, those people that are using that property, is for a charitable purpose, so we shouldn't have to pay real estate tax. And what the State Tax Commission said was, now, wait a minute. The people that own that ground and are leasing it, the use of that for them is they're leasing it. They're getting a lease payment. So that's commercial property, and they should pay that. And that is exactly what's going on here with respect to those parcels 2 through 8. The real estate tax on the fee is being paid. And so, you know, we're not trying to claim that that would be exempt. All we're talking about is the use of the improvements on that property. And the improvements on that property happen to be all the things that go with the camp. You know, the buildings, and of course all the personal property that you have to operate a camp. And so that's the distinction. And I admit it sometimes sounds like a bunch of gobbledygook. But, you know, Kanakuk Ministries is not trying to get out of doing their fair share. And I think that Mr. Hausman's comment about how the state always wants a piece, you know, that's true with respect to those licenses. That they could not operate the vehicles and the boats or whatever that you need to operate a camp without them being licensed. They're not trying to claim that they're exempt from that. And actually, it was coming over and trying to buy those licenses that kind of, you know, led all to this. I think that Mr. Strahan started looking at it again. And so, you know, from what we're trying to express here in short fashion is that the use of the properties, again, the use of the properties, that's what the Board of Equalization looks at. That's what the State Tax Commission looks at when, you know, if it ever goes up to them, is what, you know, we need to really be focusing on here. And as was stated earlier, the use of those properties has not changed one bit. So the fact that the Board of Equalization viewed it in 2007 and 2009 as being exempt, we think that that should hold, be very persuasive for this Board of Equalization because the use has not changed at all. Be happy to answer any questions, and believe me, we have some much more talented speakers waiting to share with you the other information about camp if you feel like you need to hear it.
I have a statement to make. It's one that is very the complication of exemption, no matter what the case is. As we attend the classes that we attend on this very issue, and the clerk and different members of the BOE over the years have attended these classes, the Bart Tishman is the person that puts on the classes who works for the State Tax Commission. He states in every one of those that I've been to that if there is a question to the BOE about exemption, to send it on to the state. That is a directive that he gives the numerous counties that set, I don't know how many locations, but am I right, Donna?
You're absolutely right. It's all over the state.
All over the state.
If we've ever gone to, is if we're not 100% sure, they would rather have us send it to them because they're very well aware that many counties are giving exemptions when they should not be.
So that even more complicates a meeting where you make a presentation, which clearly shows that you're a religious organization, that you're trying to do good, you're serving the purpose of God. But the facts are, is we go to training and they tell us to do something. We also have this document that tells us to do something. So it's more than us sitting here as individuals that make these decisions. I sit on all those boards from all the way from 2005, and this is my ninth BOE. And so I sit and listen to all the people that come in for exemptions. And basically, I'm glad to hear Mr. Tishner say to us, as a directive, who works for the State Tax Commission, who ultimately has a say-so over this, for let it come to them and let them be the decision makers.
That's because we're not 100% sure, though.
Huh?
Well,
it's just a recommendation.
From his class, if the board does not feel it has sufficient information to grant the exemption, issue a decision making no change in the assessment, the taxpayer can appeal to the commission or a full evidentiary record can be developed. So that's saying if we, as a board, does not feel it has sufficient information.
The benefit.
Right above that, Donna, right above that, it talks about classification decisions and exemptions, and talks about the Franciscan test?
Yes.
This board member's opinion is it does have sufficient information to grant the exemption. But I'm just one board member.
Well, and you know, honestly, that was our hope, that by providing enough information to you that you felt comfortable, because I do think that you have the authority to make the decision. And yes, I know the State Tax Commission tells everybody that, because for 400 and however many counties we have in this state, you have that many different boards of equalization and perhaps different ideas. But ultimately, this is I think a local issue. You guys are here. You know this is property in your area, and I think it's that you certainly have the power to decide how it's being used and whether or not it qualifies as exempt. And then, you know, if it doesn't work, yes, are there avenues of appeal? Yes, you can end up all before the State Tax Commission. But again, I think that's only if you don't feel comfortable making the decision. And what our hope is that we can give you enough information that you will feel comfortable about that.
Hold on a second, Donna. Caught in the middle here. I agree with Dan what you had to say, and I know of the persuasiveness of the State Tax Commission to have local boards of equalization defer such decisions to them so that we can have uniformity across the state in these decision-making times. I also know what you just read, and that the decision can be made on a local basis. I would lean towards sending this to the Missouri State Tax Commission had not all of these properties already been exempted within Taney County by prior boards of equalization. To me, that makes a big difference. So where boards have already spoke in the past and made a decision regarding these particular properties, and then that has changed, it makes the situation different. Now, Donnie, you wanted to say something?
Well, I've seen several people come before the board, and my only recommendation is, let me just say, I 100% have no doubt that you are an exempt entity. However, I have seen several individuals come before BOE, and this has happened more than once. Whether the board agrees with you today or not, if I was making a decision, I would still take it to the State Tax Commission and get an order from the State Tax Commission, because it would be very difficult for Taney County to then turn around and again try to tax you, because then you'd have the authority from the state.
I'd like to say something. There's not one L number put on any of this property. And Mr. Williams, the doubt that ought to go in your mind is what the attorney just said. Are you an attorney?
I am. Oh. Don't hold it against me, okay?
She said as clear as day.
I heard her. She said googly goo.
Googly goo. That's exactly what she
That's
said.
That's a legal term.
She said, here's the confusing issue that ought to raise the red flag. The land under this is taxable. The use of the land is not taxable. That ought to put the red flag up, because that's going to be hard for Kennecott Camp when it gets to the state level. Every number they're appealing here today does not have an L on it. It's not a lease number. At the time of exemption was granted, it was asked of Mr. Don Franks, I believe, was here. What happens to Kennecott Camp if they dissolve tomorrow? Do you go in and tear out these leasehold options? Do they disappear? Or do they go back to the non-exempt person or corporation that owns the land? You have one of the most difficult issues presented here to this Board of Equalization, and I believe some of them don't even realize it, because you've got part. If it's exempt, why isn't it all exempt? If it's, that's the decision that has to be made by this board. Personal property. If you're exempt all over the world, if you're exempt by Missouri statute, that still may not allow your personal property to be exempt.
Well,
if you know the statutes, you've read the statutes, and
right.
You've read these cases.
Right.
If it fits everything that you read on the Frank Eisen, that doesn't exempt personal property.
And
personal property very seldom receives an exemption in the state of Missouri.
Are we here talking about personal property?
Yes, it's sure. Part of it.
Yeah.
Both.
Is part of the personal property that we're talking about currently in front of the State Tax Commission?
It's actually in court.
It's in circuit court.
Circuit court.
The which one of these appeal numbers would that pertain to, or is it all of them?
Appeal numbers.
We have a number of different.
You've got a personal property number, 32850.
Excuse me, tell me again. Which
number
is it?
75 is your personal.
32850.
32850. And that gets into more complicated stuff than. I mean, it's.
Yeah, if you look at the under tab one where we've okay. listed what's involved, and then behind that are actually the items of personal property. But I don't think this is what you need to keep in mind here. It's not unusual for you to have a situation where you have a property owner who leases out their property. That's exactly what happened in the Branson Sports Club case. It was no different. But what was going on there is the people that owned that ground were trying to say, well, we shouldn't have to pay because the people that are using it are exempt. So we ought to be exempt. Well, no, it doesn't work that way. And that's what we're, I think, why we're different. And, yeah, we're not suggesting this is a parcels 2 through 8 involve leased property. Kennecott Ministries has leased the buildings there, and they're using that for the camp operation, for the link year operation, and so forth. But parcel 1 is actually owned. The ground and the improvements are owned by Kennecott Ministries. It's not, I mean, really, when you think about it, it's no different than the city going out and setting up an industrial park and leasing out buildings on it. That happens a lot too. Well, they get the ground's exempt because it's owned by the city, but the people that come in there and build their factory on it, that's not exempt. They have to pay for that. And that's exactly what's
at the end of T Highway. I'll give you another example, and I got called some names that I wouldn't want to repeat today, but at the end of T Highway, there was a wonderful man, had a piece of property that he leased to a church. And it was a church for many years. They paid taxes on that church.
The church did or the guy did?
The guy did.
Well, because he should have. It was his property.
Right, but it was a lease to the church.
Exactly.
Where they was holding this.
And I think that's what they're, I could be wrong, but you guys are saying the owners of the property. It's just like whenever I bought the ambulance district building. The ambulance district didn't pay taxes, but starting January 1, I started paying taxes.
Right.
But now you're not following what they're asking. They're asking that the owner of the land pay on the land, but nobody pay on the structures, is what's been asked of me.
Who owns the structures?
Kanakuk Ministries.
So Kanakuk Ministries owns the structures, not
owns the lease of the structures.
The structures. They own the structures.
It's more complicated, guy. And like I say, I just like to say,
you know, You know, it is very complicated. But with any piece of real estate, you've got the dirt. That's called fee. You got the dirt. And in this instance, the dirt is owned by somebody else who's paying the tax on the dirt. But you also have what you do with the dirt. If you put buildings on it and improvements and add fixtures, that's separate. And that's, in this instance, covered by a lease. It's a leasehold interest. The state of Missouri says, you know, if this were a for-profit entity, that entity would have to pay tax too. It's just that in this case, it's a not-for-profit qualifying as exempt, so they shouldn't have to pay tax on the leasehold part of it. That's the difference.
Well, we've got a situation here, and nobody has recognized it. We don't have any L numbers on what you're appealing. All we've got is the ground.
Say that again.
Oh, I don't know what you mean.
Lease.
You can identify that it's a leased property, is what he's saying.
Yeah, it has to be described as a leased property, and all your properties that's down here is on the land.
All the properties that are listed are for the improvements only.
That's just in your legal description. That's another technicality you're going to have to work your way out of. You can't legally describe improvements only. In the taxation process, we tax the ground, as you just said. And that's what these numbers represent. The L numbers are not represented here, and I'm sure there is some L numbers which represents the improvements only.
All of the improvements are owned by Kanakuk Ministries.
I understand.
They're not leased.
Well, oh. Where's the lease involved? It
on
says
the land.
It says on the improvements.
No, they're not leasing.
Let me go get a legal description.
All right, James, you brought up a good question. Why is the dirt and the buildings not together? And what happens someday?
When we sell something at tax sale,
right.
We're selling the dirt.
I understand.
And we don't care if the Taj Mahal's on it.
Right.
And it's not ever legally described in any action of what's there.
Okay. Let me explain the rationale behind it so that you understand why it is what it is. Joe and Debbie Joe White, you know, the White family's been involved in this camp since 1932. Spike worked there. The dirt has always been owned by the family. The buildings, the whole operation. 4 years ago in 2008, Joe and Debbie Joe decided, you know what, someday they're not going to be around. So they're in the process of turning the whole thing over to a nonprofit. They donated the operations, the buildings, everything. There's an emotional aspect for the White family to retain ownership of the dirt. Upon their death, the dirt rolls into the nonprofit. That's the motive or the rationale behind the thing. There's no other entity other than the White family owning the dirt until the sole survivor between Joe and Debbie Joe die, and then it all goes into the nonprofit. So there's no tax motive here. There's no other. That's it. So that's what we're trying to work with.
I understand.
The Whites pay the taxes on the land, the value of the land. Everything they donated to the nonprofit, in fact, is owned by the nonprofit, and hence we say is tax exempt.
I understand. I understand it, but I don't know how to apply it. And I've had many people look at it and wonder about how to apply it, because in the state of Missouri, everything is legally described as the dirt. As the dirt. I don't care if the dam's on it or wherever. It's described as the dirt. And so as you, as a purchaser, you go out there, whatever's there, you own.
Yeah, and I think that the state, recognizing that there are many, many situations where you have dirt that becomes commercial property, buildings are put up, leased out, you know, they decided a long time ago that they didn't want to lose out by just saying, well, we're only going to tax the dirt. They started looking, well, where are you putting on that dirt? And it's what's been put on the dirt that we're talking about today.
We have a court order on a project where we didn't list a building as a lease, an L. All we do is add an L to the number. Judge Effort put down an order. Nobody had the right to tax anything because the L was not applied, and the county lost the revenue of that building because it wasn't labeled correctly with an L versus the dirt.
Yeah, well, it would seem in this instance, and I don't know if this has got an L or not, but I wouldn't think that that really would impact the issue here, because we're explaining, it's kind of the opposite of the situation that you found yourself in with that sportsman's club, that the dirt is not what's before the Board of Equalization, because the tax has been paid on the dirt, except for parcel one. Again, I want to point out that's the dirt, everything's owned by Kanakuk Ministries there. But it's these other parcels where the ministries owns all the buildings that are on that, all the equipment that's on that. And that's what is being, you're trying to tax, which we're saying, oh, wait a minute, that's exempt.
That's why it's more complicated than personality.
Oh, we understand.
It's more complicated than personality.
This is not about personality. This is just trying to figure out what's the right thing to do.
And I understand.
So what we've been trying, hopefully, to do this morning is to give you all enough information so that you do feel comfortable with that.
We all try to do the right thing. But
as I
sit on these boards, and at one time when the decision was made, and Mr. Houseman brought it up before, about the 2007 and the 2009 decision, the 2011 decision. When we made those decisions, Kanakuk Camp tried to do the right thing because the properties were exempted. And they wrote a letter, and I went up to look for that letter, and I couldn't find it there, but I've got it in my office. My office is a little bit, as you used the term a while ago. Anyway, the facts are, you wrote a letter, Mr. Franks, I believe, wrote the letter and said, no, there's pieces of property that lay within our properties that need to be taxed. And it was a home, it was two or three other things. So you tried to do the right thing. We're trying to do the right thing. We're trying to take direction from the law. As we take direction from what's stated here, and we take direction of what has been pounded in our heads at our training to send it to the State Tax Commission. And then the protective part of that is that if it goes to the State Tax Commission, it's not finalized there. It can go to court. There's three processes that can take place in this Board of Equalization and Taxation process. And so personally, myself, as I read the lines in this, and I read the lines and the message that's been sent to me by the training, personally, I just want you to know that I'm going to vote to send it to the State Tax Commission. Although I think you'll be all right. But I'm just telling you that we made a mistake in 2011. Everybody makes mistakes. And there was a mistake made, and Mr. Franks wrote us a letter and tried to correct that mistake, because there was pieces of property that were exempt that, after discovery, they decided that they weren't. So that's even though those previous decisions were made, we want to make the right decision here, or at the state level, or at the circuit court level.
Well, Danny, I appreciate that, but this board does have the ability to put it to bed at this time. That's why this meeting was called.
That's, I don't want to interrupt you. This board is a temporary decision. That's what's happened to you in the past. If the state says it, it's a done deal. This board can change upon the changing of assessor, upon a changing of board members. They can, one board member can come back in 2 years and say, well, I just didn't know about this Kennecott Camp thing. Let's bring it back forward. So it's not a finalizing. This board is a temporary fix. The state is a final, full fix for Kennecott Camps.
I agree with you 100%. It's just a frustrating thing for you guys. We're trying to figure it out. I mean, most of us probably do think you're exempt, but James has brought up really good things that are concerning. We don't want to make a mistake because we're representing the people.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Help me with a couple of questions, James, if you will. You brought up the designation L, which sounds like is a technicality. Are you inferring to us that we're not looking at?
I don't think we're looking at the right parcels. These parcels are
based upon that.
Right.
If we're not looking at the right parcels, then there could be no decision made about the parcels, the exemptions, which is what they're here to talk about on these parcels. There could be no appeal to the State Tax Commission. Is that right? I mean, if we can't hear it, we can't make a decision. It can't go on.
I'll have to look at the way my mappers, they may have not got the L on the right numbers. I've got to go find out what's going on.
Let me follow up with this statement. If I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, the Board of Equalization has the ability to bring up any piece of property or pieces of property once we've gone through our appointments that we wish to talk about.
Yes, sir.
Well, it's my desire to make sure that we bring up the correct parcels of property with the L's or whatever else is needed so that that technicality is taken care of so that we can address these issues.
I believe these are dirt. I believe every one of these numbers are dirt.
Well, I'm going to ask you and the clerk for help then to determine for us what we correctly will put in front of us so that we can make a decision one way or the other about what it is that we all know that they're seeking and where it is that we know that they're seeking.
Can I ask a question of property numbers that you have listed here that you turned in? Is that the ones where you received a bill from the assessor?
Yes, may I approach?
Yes, certainly.
This is Kay Bohr, and she knows everything there is to know about the paperwork.
Hello, ma'am.
That's high praise.
This is map location one. This is the family camp, which is the exception. The land and the improvements are all being assessed. Together.
And that'd be parcel one, right, Kate?
Yeah, map location one.
Yeah.
Yeah. The remainder of these are clearly described. This is 2 through 8.
What she gave us is 6th on our beacon list. Okay.
Are described as improvements only in the description.
Right.
Improvements only. This is not dirt. And these are not leased.
The improvements are owned by ministries.
They are owned by Kennecott Ministries.
Right. My comments were to make sure, technically, that we have everything that we need in front of us to make a decision.
And I've never seen a legal description of this nature. Okay. Improvements only except Cliffhanger, Health Center, Angel Wings, and Dulos is the legal description. And I've questioned that since I've been wanting that to change. I've been wanting that to change for Kennecott Camp's purposes.
Well,
because this improvements only is on dirt parcel numbers.
Sure.
Well, I don't know about that, but I think that the except for are is described the parcels that Mr. Strahan, too, up there, mentioned earlier.
No, I'm one.
You're one. Okay.
Yeah, don't get that light started.
Does that mean you're older? But that's those parcels that Don wrote the letter about that said we should be paying tax on that. So I think that's all that referred to. So if we've got that straightened out, would the board, Joe, Mr. White is here. I'm sure he might like to say a few words if you want to hear it or.
Yeah, Joe.
I have a real quick question.
Sure.
So I'm looking at what you guys refer to, I believe, as it's the 7.83 acres. 4.000. Is that number one on your guys'?
Yeah, I think
that's 004-004.
004.00, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. I don't know what you have in front of you, but it says one number 1-1 is residence 1973, 1-3 residence 1940, 1-5 patio. And then it goes into number 2, 3, 4. Everything that was built in 2006, I'm assuming that's what is owned by
Ministry? Yes.
What about the two residences in the patio? 1970, built 1973, 1940, and 1972.
They were purchased by Canica Ministries and incorporated into that.
So I guess my question would be, how do we, because I know we can do, you know, obviously there's improvements, there's land, and then there's total. So you guys are asking for the exemption to be just on the improvements, not necessarily on the land.
No, for map location one, that parcel, that's owned
by... The land and everything's owned by...
Yes, okay. Yes.
But that's the only one of the parcels that were submitted. The others are improvements.
Correct.
With the exception of, if I'm not mistaken, number 75, 2013-75 BOE number, and that's the personal property? 3250?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
So now what you guys are referring to as number 7? ...15.68 acres. There you've got residences, garage, asphalt paving, swimming pools, meeting halls.
Those residences are staff and camper housing.
But that's all owned by the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
There's no value given to it on Beacon, anyways, on the land.
That's all pulled to one parcel.
So there's other... Because there is another owner there... If we looked at that, then you'd see the land value. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So with that parcel number, we're showing that it's not the land, it's just the what's owned by the ministry.
Right.
And how do we pull up what's owned by, what's assessed?
The dirt?
Yeah.
I've never had this before, Connecticut Camps. This is a new experience for me on trying to value what's there.
Is there a parcel number attached to...
You could pull it up on Beacon by going to the map and just clicking.
That's what I did, and this is what's pulling up.
To the map section?
Okay.
And which property did you want to see?
The one that is just south of where she's at.
So it's right there?
Yeah.
What's the number?
And see the little box within that outline?
Yeah. Okay. So K-Land 4 is saying that's the property for the entire amount, 15.68. Okay. So you guys don't have a problem with the 156.8. You say you owe that.
Yep.
The evaluation of tax based on that number. So it's already separated.
Yes.
That's my question.
Yes, separated. It is.
So the parcel numbers that we type in and pull up are the parcel numbers for Kanakuk Ministries, not... Okay. Right. So it's already separated for us.
Should be.
My only question would be on the... And I don't know, I'm ignorant on the subject of the personal property. But my understanding is there's a case there, but then it was dismissed, or what happened?
I think she said that they are in circuit court now. Is that correct?
Correct, on the prior years. So, but we're talking about this year.
Yeah, this is 2013.
All this before you today is the 2013. So the property was the personal property was assessed. That was paid under protest, and we're appealing to you because we believe that that should be exempt. The statute that deals with this is it talks in terms of real and personal, so it's really the same analysis for both.
I know Danny's wanting to send it on. Is that what you voiced, Danny?
I'm directed that way by training and by the statement here from the state of Missouri that I'm directed to send it on.
I don't have as much training as you.
Well, I don't even think you made the training.
No, I did.
Let me move on to hear comments from Mr. White. We're already close to being two appointments behind for people that are waiting in the room, but would you join us, Joe?
Yes, sir.
I'll get sentimental here. I love Taney County, and Debbie Jo and I got up here 40 years ago to reach the kiddos of this county, and Jack and Sherry adopted us to reach the Taney County kids. When we got here, Taney County didn't have a lot of youth ministries at all, and the Lord just gave us a passion for kiddos. When I was coaching football at Texas A&M and running young life clubs. And as soon as we landed in Branson, I got a call from Jack and Sherry to start as much, I guess, youth movements, if you would, to reach the lost kids of this county. We started a program called the Taney County Youth Ministry, where I first became acquainted as a Texan of the kids from Kirbyville and Forsyth and Branson and Hollister. And out at the camps that were young and built by E.R. Russell and Junior Strahan and Jim McClary and Brett Smith that I grew up working with. It became the hub of Taney County Youth Ministries, and we had kids by the dozens that ran all over those properties, and we'd teach them the gospel and give them a life free from drugs and alcohol. And it was wonderful. That evolved into an organization called Young Life that Deb Jo and I were blessed to start here. We wanted to reach all the kids of Forsyth and Kirbyville and Branson and Hollister. And we literally had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kiddos go through those youth clubs, which now have evolved into K-Life clubs in Forsyth and Hollister and Reed Spring and Branson. At one time, one of the young men on one of those sports teams told me that 80% of those kiddos were using some kind of illegal substance, because there was just no other alternative for the kids in this county to be able to follow Christ and live substance-free. I was alarmed by that player's report, and it broke my heart. By the grace of God, today, when I say hundreds of those kids are following Christ now as adults in Taney County and are living substance-free, I'm not exaggerating. The statistics are quite different today on the sports teams in our counties. All credit be to the Lord. Where it used to be, according to the players, 80% of the kids were using substances, it would be way on the other side of the statistical. And to see the Lord leading hundreds of these local kids to Christ and hundreds of these local kids to substance-free living is thrilling over the last 40 years, to say the least. The camps, as they have grown to reach now 100,000 inner-city kids all over this nation and several hundred thousand rural kids and suburban kids and so forth, have become sort of a lap for our Taney County kids to get to come to Camp Free. And, you know, my daddy was always, and you know, I'm a lot like my daddy, but my daddy was always, you know, your ministry is to your home. And we always believe in doing business in Taney County and taking care of the kids of Taney County, because the Taney County kids are our home kids. I could tell you so many wonderful stories of Taney County kids who've come to our camps on scholarship. They're literally now by the thousands over the years. One kid named David, his daddy was killed in Table Rock Lake in a boating accident. And I met David on the football field after camp. I'm the football coach out there where I get a chance to get very close to many of the boys so we can lead those kids to Christ and leave their substances behind. I walked onto the football field after David's daddy died. He had just left our camp and was back here playing ball. And I told David he ever needed daddy that I'd be there for him. David's sorrow led him into a lifestyle of dealing drugs. And men, I don't need to tell y'all and ladies that the drug flow in our schools is alarming. It's mostly Mexican mafia drugs. I think a lot of us adults are just aloof to the amount of drugs that go through our schools. Not so with the camp kids who are from Branson, Hollister, and Reed Springs, and Forsyth. David started doing drugs, selling drugs, dealing drugs. He was one of, as I said, probably hundreds of stories. But his junior in high school, he called me and he said, "You told me when I needed a daddy, you'd be that man for me." So, David came over to my house. He gave his life to Christ. He instantly became substance free. He started leading his other drug addicted buddies to Christ. He would bring them over to my house. I had a chance to lead him to Christ, start Bible studies with those kids. David is now working for the State Department in the United States of America, serving as an agent of the United States of America around the world. I was coaching football the other day, James, and I had 50 kids in the gym, and I was coaching Texas A&M style, and it was very intense and exciting. And I had this one kid who wasn't participating, and so after practice, I just said, "David, sit down." I said, "What's bothering you?" He said, "I'm going to go back home." And I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "I'm tired of selling drugs. I'm tired of doing drugs." He was just an everyday American kid. An hour later, I led that young man to Christ. And then the next night, I was down in the water baptizing about 70 kiddos. And it was a wonderful evening to see 70 kids get baptized in one night. Which meant to them they were leaving all of their porn and all of their drugs and all of their alcohol in the water, and that they would never go back to that lifestyle again. And there was this young man, David. I get to sit down with these kids, and they get to write a personal constitution the next day. And they write down the 10 things they're never going to do again, and on the back, the 10 things they're going to start doing, beginning with obedience to their parents, beginning with their grades in school, their daily Bible studies, their church youth fellowship, etc. To God be the glory, ladies and gentlemen, but by the grace of God alone, Taney County is a different place for kids than it was 40 years ago, and I take zero credit for it, but the reality is that the ministries of the camps have changed this county. And for that, I'm grateful. Over those 40 years, the Lord began a ministry to starving kids in the world. We first began, and by the way, you'll never read this in newspapers because we're commanding scripture not to talk about the good things that God does, and He just uses us as vehicles. But He began a ministry in Cambodia to build hospitals for kids in the world that was left by the Vietnam War. And by the grace of God, we've seen hundreds of thousands of kids healed in the name of Christ in Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam. That movement led to the work in Haiti, where we get to work with 6,000 kiddos a year and feed them every day and put them in 19 schools. That has grown into an organization based on the Kennecott Camp soil that reaches 200 ministries around the third world in 40 different nations, supplying food and medical supplies to tens of thousands of children, all growing off of the Kanakuk soil. That is our crop. On a year-round basis, we have built an institute to train now hundreds of future youth leaders to take the crop, what's growing on the Kanakuk soil, which, by the grace of God, has been so blessed, now to ministries all over the world. We started a link year, which is a year of college before the kids go to college, where 70% leave their faith and turn to a life of alcohol, drugs, and pornography. Now we're taking those kids for their freshman year of college on the Kanakuk soil so that they can go, instead of being a drug user and an alcohol user on their college campus, they can lead their college campuses to Christ. Those going on a 9-month basis on the Kanakuk soil. That is our crop. As I said, off of the Kanakuk soil has grown this wonderful ministry, which now is affecting 530-some-odd inner cities around the country, where 100,000 kids have become our crop, inner city kids who go back to their cities to change the culture of the inner city. I dare say, ladies and gentlemen, that by the grace of God, that jail over there, and I've been familiar with a lot of young men from Hollister and Kirbyville and Forsyth, who've gone to that jail because they were not able to take advantage of the ministries that grew up on the Kanakuk soil, has been prevented from admitting hundreds of men and women who would have been in those jail cells. But by the grace of God, because of they get to come to our camps, because they get to come to our youth clubs that exist all over this county, have chosen to live a life substance free. Now we're able to export that into the inner cities around this country and into the rural lands and churches and cities around the country. A couple of the things I'd love to call your attention to is we have long used those properties to grow the same crop to men and women who are leaders around the world. And by the grace of God, we've been able to help start hundreds of similar ministries to the third world nations around the world as the leaders come into our camps free to be trained to go out and start similar ministries in third world companies around the world. Currently, I'm working with the Doug Dynasty Boys and Timmy Tebow to try to reach now hundreds of thousands of men around the country, not just for the cause of Christ, but so that these men will go back home as responsible fathers, responsible husbands, and responsible men of the community. And it's wonderful to be able to team up with the Doug Dynasty guys and the Timmy Tebows of the country, again, to take this same product that's growing here in Taney County on Kanakuk soil and to influence the nation and the world to live the lifestyle that all of us in this room believe that is the right lifestyle for a man to lead. One other crop that's growing up on the Kanakuk soil is a quest to reach 1 million college students. And now we've reached almost in the 500,000 mark who are at Missouri University, Southwest Missouri University, Central Missouri State, Southeast Missouri State, and similar secular colleges around the country. They said we're getting close to 500,000, where those kids are out drinking themselves to death and doing drugs and living irresponsibly, where they become irresponsible dads, irresponsible fathers, irresponsible community members. But by the grace of God, this product that's growing up on this Kanakuk soil, that's now, as I said, influencing hundreds of thousands of college students around the country to completely change their lives and to begin to be responsible citizens. I'll just close with one story. And by the way, thank you all for listening. I've longed to be with you all, and just to thank Taney County for being our home for 40 years. It's been a wonderful home. But we believe that every young man, whether his parents make zero or whether his parents make enough money to help pay some of the bills, that every young man and every young woman that comes to our youth groups and to our camps is born to be a Christian leader. There's three kinds of kids in this country. There's bad leaders, there's followers, and there's good leaders. Most kids today, the vast majority of kids today, are followers or bad leaders. And the stakes are so high today, men and women. It's not just a six-pack of beer like it used to be. The stakes are a lifetime of addiction to pornography and drugs and alcohol anymore. But very few kids are Christian leaders or leading their schools. We believe that every single young man and woman is called to be a Christian leader. And by the grace of God, the Lord allows us to awaken the Christian leader in these kids that we get to work with. And the fruit is just almost immeasurable. One little girl, just an average little girl from Crane, Missouri, comes to our camp on scholarship. And again, I could tell hundreds of stories. She goes back to her school in Crane as a 14-year-old girl after being around Trish Helsel and her staff for a few summers. Called, like most of our kids, to lead their school, to be the Timmy Tebow of their school. As a freshman, that little girl walks on her basketball team with a calling of God that she gets from her and her staff to lead her team and her school to Christ, which, again, is not just a religious decision. It's a social decision of how they're going to live their lifestyles. And she begins to lead Bible studies at her locker. Yeah. By the time the season's over, they win the state championship. She's the catalyst of the team. The coach is having her pray for the team before and after the basketball games. And I go over to present the state championship appreciation award to the team. We do a youth rally. We get 400 kids to show up for the event. And even though it's a public school, this one 14-year-old girl has a print the state championship, T-shirt in the shape of a cross, where the whole team, and now the school, has been, I would say, Timmy Tebowized, if you can understand what that expression means, by a freshman in high school who got it. And again, by the grace of God, those stories could be told till the sun goes down. But I've been excited to say hi to you all and just to thank this county for 40 wonderful years of by the grace of God, seeing that soil over there, as you say, James, the dirt over there, grow what the Lord has allowed it to grow over 40 years. And I believe from an educational standpoint, a charitable standpoint, and from a religious standpoint, our steeple is the sky. Our church pews are the sides of football fields, the sides of boats. Today, kids are memorizing scripture, and they're in boats going to the Pizza Hut of reward for memorizing a whole chapter in the Bible. I'm on wave runners leading kids to Christ and baptizing kids up at the end of the lake. I mean, it's an interesting looking church out there, if you will. But the worship goes on 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And I appreciate the good favor that this county has always shown that dirt over there, and pray that this county will continue to partner with us, if you will, and allow that dirt over there to continue to reach this world for the cause of Christ. Thank you all for letting me meet with you all this morning.
Thank you.
Just talking to you. God bless.
Any last comments?
You got it.
I would like to ask this board to allow the assessor and the clerk to put before us the appropriate numbers technically so that we can make a decision regarding these properties, that we'll either schedule this as soon as we can, and if a representative wishes to be here, or all of you, Let's let them know when we're going to do that. That'd be okay, Donna?
We're going to reschedule it, all of it?
Well, at various times we bring up different properties that we haven't addressed. And my point is we need to make sure that technically we have the description down correctly. My intention is to look at exactly what it is that these individuals want us to look at in writing. Is that all right with the board members?
It's fine.
For the individuals that are here with Delta Ridge Housing, Good Shepherd Meadows, I apologize for being late. What I would like to do is give us a 5-minute recess, and then we'll start with Delta Ridge Housing Incorporated.